Thursday afternoon to you. It is the 11th of June already, and this week has moved along pretty well, but we've been very busy. We were broadcasting from Midland on Tuesday. Monday, we were at the Detroit Economic Club. Wednesday, back in our area, and today as well, but big plans for the day, too. And apparently now, starting the show, I'm always going to see Rich Luzinski over the shoulder of Dave Rieger. They may come as a package, for all I know. But I've seen the Richmeister now 2-3 days in a row when I can go months without seeing him. Nice to see you, Dave. How does he get out? I thought that room was locked that we put him in. He gets out okay, though. That's all right. All right. It's always nice to see him. Relentless Positive Radio. Okay, we've got so much going on. All right, we're not going to ignore. Obviously, there's a problem at the Pentagon, an air quality alarm at the Pentagon, and people are now sheltering in place. We could talk about it forever, but nobody knows anything, so we're not going to BS you and pretend we have any idea what's going on because no one knows. When we do know, we will let you know. Here's what we do know. The words that Jimmy Greek spoke to me years ago in New York City on the streets outside that bodega down from my apartment when he said, I said, Greek, what are you doing here? Got NBA Finals on. He goes, with basketball, Paul, you just need to watch about the last 5 minutes. Look at all of these games. Well, other than when the Spurs won. But look at these games, and it's the last 5 minutes. And last night, I'm not rubbing it in, I hope you had a chance to see history in the making as the New York Knicks pulled off the greatest comeback in NBA playoff history. They were down 29 points, and at the buzzer, they won 107 to 106. And for the city that has seen it all, they've never seen anything like that. I could feel the rocking of New York City all the way back home in Michigan. You're a real sports guy. Rieger, you've never seen anything like it. Was that like one of the most exciting things you've ever seen?
Oh, it was up there. That was quite the game. I don't know. When you're up by 29 points and you're the Spurs, and you start jacking up threes early in the shot clock, like eight in a row, you deserve to lose. Sorry. I don't know what in the world they were thinking. They're a young team. You know, the coach of the Spurs is only 39 years old. He's a young coach. But momentum is a real thing, especially in sports. And once that momentum starts to turn, it's hard to get it to turn back.
They're lucky they're going back home. That's going to help them a little.
It will. Now, unfortunately, I wish the game was tomorrow, but it's on Saturday. So it's the NBA's weird schedule that they like to extend these series out. So I think if the Spurs win on Saturday and make it 3-2, the Knicks might be in a little bit of trouble. I think the Knicks probably want to go to San Antonio and finish this off.
Well, I would look, there are fans who say, geez, I hope they come back home and finish it here. No, we need them to finish it as quickly as they can, wherever they have to do it. As much as we'd love to have it in New York City with the Knicks winning, believe me, they're not going to hold back so that they can be back in front of the home fans. It's too hard, and too many things can go wrong.
Right.
And so we just wish them good luck.
It's been 50 years since the Knicks won a title. So
it is 50 years. A little over 50. I think a little over 50
years. Yeah, it's
years.
Early 70s, I think. Yeah. So.
And New York needs this. Like Detroit needs it. We could use a shot in the arm like
Detroit,
that.
Detroit hasn't had a title out of the major four since 2008. So it's been a while for Detroit, too.
Yep. And it's so good for the city. And again, I'll reiterate, the city of New York could use it. I'm hoping it happens. You know, we've got two daughters living there, Natalie Geisinger, Sophie Smith. And, of course, they're caught up in it. And Sophie sent me a video. She's been in bars where the people go crazy. The bars, far away from Madison Square Garden, the bars are jammed. You can't move.
Yeah, sure.
And then she was at a friend's house, I think last night, and she videotaped. And the excitement, I'm so glad she thought to videotape as the game was ending and the Knicks were winning and making history. It was just so exciting.
I'm pretty sure that OG Anunoby will never have to buy a drink or a meal in New York for the rest of his life.
I think, I don't have it in front of me, but I think the New York Post headline was OMG.
Oh, yeah.
And
perfect. Perfect. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. Jalen Brunson, took that three, and nobody blocked him out, went in, and it's like it tipped it in, and it was just insane.
And it was not an easy tip in.
No.
I mean, that was... Oh.
It was incredible. It was just... and then... My favorite part is how everybody did not leave. Like, I watched the entire post-game show that they had, and nobody left the stadium. Even all the celebrities that were in Celebrity Row. Everybody's walking on the court. They're all, like, hugging the players. They're all friends.
There's some beautiful people
that don't like it. I personally think it's kind of funny.
Oh, it is. And watching the celebrities is a part of the action. It's part of the fun. Mm-hmm. And then you wonder, well, geez, they're $100,000 seats. Well, we now know that there's a Celebrity Row where, and this being the first time since 1999 that Madison Square Garden has hosted a championship series game, the world's most famous arena. Yes, many of the expensive seats are paid for by athletes and entertainers, but there's a select area that they invite free of charge celebrities.
Right.
And all they ask of the celebrities is that they dress to be presentable on the Jumbotron, on television, and any special videos they might do after the game. And they ask that you stay in your seats, meaning you stay there. You can't leave the game early.
Right.
Whether it's a blowout or a loss, they don't want you leaving the game.
So,
if given a courtside invitation, the celebrities cannot leave or sell their seats. They must be camera ready, appear on the MSG Jumbotron, and be willing to film promotional contest. Pretty doggone exciting.
Now, you just obviously live in New York and worked in New York for many years. Obviously, you probably have been to the Garden for something, either a concert or a game.
Yeah.
How cool is, Matt, I've never been there, how cool is what they call one of the greatest sports arenas in the world?
It's very cool. It's very cool. I believe that I have interviewed, is it Dolan?
James Dolan. Okay,
James,
yes, you have.
Dolan,
okay,
the owner.
Yes.
And, you know, these are very flamboyant guys. I met the owner of the Mets at one point.
Oh, okay.
Out on the street, he was introduced to me, and I'm not a big sports guy, as you well know. And, it was nice meeting him. And I remember, I can't remember the name. It was a family name that I had heard before, at least. I can't think of it right now.
I don't know, but that place, let me tell you, that place looked like an absolute blast. It would have been very cool to be there, either as a member of the media covering it or just as a fan. Or even outside at the block party, it just looked like a big party.
I didn't like, you told me that they were throwing eggs.
they were.
I don't like that. That's eggs can be dangerous.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they were.
The right
they got
place.
A little. They got a little. If they saw you in a Spurs jersey, they weren't necessarily the nicest. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Well, that's kind of why they didn't give them the permit in the first place for the other one. All right. Lot going on. We'll talk about it. Today's National German Chocolate Cake Day. Did you know? Do you guys like the German chocolate cake? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's a chocolate cake, layer cake with coconut pecan frosting.
Yeah.
There's nothing German about it. It was actually invented by a guy named Sam German. Is that wild?
That's crazy.
I never heard that.
Not a huge fan of coconut, but it's
a good cake, and it's tasty. I haven't seen one in a long time, but it was now you know. Sam German invented it in 1852. Tonight, big night. I'm excited to go to the Old Field Society dinner at the Big Rock Italian Chop House, celebrating the love of fine autos, cigars, food, wine, and whiskey. This should only be in Detroit, shouldn't it? This is a Detroit thing. It's named after America's first prominent race car driver, Barney Oldfield. Did you know that name?
I did not know that
now
name.
You do, and the Old Field Society dinner with the Founders Committee You'll know some of these folks. Our friend Rod Elberts, Fritz Bossert, Keith Flickinger, David Madeira, Corey McFarland, and again, our old friend Paul Sabatini from the various auto shows. That's the Founders Committee, and I am certainly looking forward to participating in the festivities there tonight at the Big Rock Italian Chop House, which is really a fabulous restaurant. We've had a couple of great restaurants we've talked about in the last couple of days. There you go. All right, we're underway. It is Thursday, June 11th. We are underway at 12:15. 12:23. And you may have heard this by now. This is unfortunate, and we don't have any real details. I don't, but Marie might. Plans to mark the long-awaited debut of the Gordie Howe International Bridge. There was supposed to be a ribbon cutting tomorrow. Well, the plans have suddenly been put on hold. And WJR's Marie Osborne has the very latest. Marie, good afternoon.
Hi, Paul. So officials with the Windsor-Detroit Bridge Authority say that scheduled kickoff event in Windsor no longer happening. Both Canada and the United States are pressing pause on the opening of the crossing. Pete Hoekstra is the U.S. ambassador to Canada, and he didn't want to discuss any specific timeline for the bridge's opening in an interview with the Detroit News today. He did affirm that he and the Commerce Secretary, Howard Lutnick, are leading discussions with the Canadians about opening the bridge. Here's his direct quote from the Detroit News. Where we are right now is we've got the right folks talking and working on getting the bridge open. Now, earlier this week, you might remember the White House contradicted plans for Friday's ribbon-cutting ceremony, saying that no timeline had been finalized and the president's position on the bridge hadn't changed. President Trump, you will remember, had threatened to block the bridge's opening in February. He wanted concessions from Canada and trade talks or a share of the future toll revenue. The Canadian Prime Minister, Mark Carney, said earlier that the opening of the bridge could be delayed, but that there's no, quote, big drama. Governor Whitmer's office hasn't given many details about this cancellation. Debbie Dingell has weighed in on this. She says that she talks to Pete Hoekstra almost every day, and she knows he wants to get this bridge open. That's all she would say. And the nearly $5 billion span has been in the works for 8 years, Paul. You know that well. But the final approvals were delayed during the U.S.-Canadian trade talks. And right now, there is no new date set for an opening.
What a shame. This is just a shame. Mm-hmm. This is unacceptable, unforgivable, and a game being played by people who are not affected by this. Like all of the small businesses that have even built businesses to work to service the people coming on and off that bridge, they have been screwed around mercilessly. From Canada to America, from America to Canada, and it is unacceptable and unfortunate. I thought I'd weigh in since we can't get anyone else to weigh in right now.
And isn't it interesting that everybody's they're choosing their words very carefully.
Yeah, they're afraid of the president who's becoming a bully.
Yeah, if you're really reading what they're saying, everybody's choosing their words very carefully. It's interesting that the governor really hasn't come out and, you know, made a statement on about all this. So, it's, you know, earlier today when, you know, if you noticed all week, though, we weren't really getting a firm thing about this ribbon cutting. We weren't getting firm details. In fact, on my way in this morning, I thought, you know, I'm going to have to check in with a couple of people and see what's going on with this.
Good
to see
you.
If we're a go for tomorrow. And then I sat down and then this broke that, nope, it's all off. So, there's been a lot of kind of wishy-washiness all week about this.
Yeah, and it's all based on politics.
You're right about that.
And it's just so wrong and so unfortunate. This president could use some wins, and this would be a win. This would be an international win of two countries coming together, working hard, and being able to create this bridge after all this time and, frankly, all this money. Look, I was against it in the beginning about it becoming Canada paying for everything, which meant that we don't get any of the money for years until Canada's paid back. We don't get probably tax advantages we would have gotten. It's why I said the Maroons have built bridges. Let them take it on. Let them privately underwrite the whole thing. That's what I said a long time ago. And then this sort of thing wouldn't be happening, by the way. But it did happen. Everything was approved. Everything was all go. Everyone did their jobs. And now cut off at the knees. And I don't know. It's just distasteful. With everything that's going on right now, it's just really distasteful.
And it doesn't seem like any of this is the problem from the Canadian side. It seems that the problem is on our side.
It's not a problem from anyone on the U.S. side or the Canadian side that had anything to do with the bridge.
Right.
Nothing.
Right.
Look, it's done. Like I said, I didn't agree with the way it was all set up, but it's done. It's, you know, you don't go backwards. Of course, we are being led by a president now who can't go a day without going backwards and talking about how bad Biden was and how bad this was and how bad that was, when really what he should be concentrating on is doing the best he can do from this day forward. And if Iran is his example, it ain't going so well, Mr. President. I'm sorry to tell you, I've known you for 40 years and you don't listen to me anymore, but you probably should. Okay. Got that off my chest, Marie.
Do we have a round of applause for Mr. Smith?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Copies of Mr. Smith's speech aren't even available to Mr. Smith because I don't write this stuff down. The other day I gave a toast at a business thing and people said, when did you write that? I said, as I said it.
Yeah. You are so good at that.
Thank you, Marie. God bless you. Keep up the good work.
We'll keep an eye on this.
I know that you will, and we'll get through this eventually. Marie Osborne, WJR, Director of Community Affairs and News. One of my favorite other people, the head of petroleum analysis at Gas Buddy, Patrick DeHaan, is coming up next with Paul W. Smith in Focus on WJR. Hazardous materials incident continues at Pentagon, causing hazmat and large police presence on site, but we don't have any other details. When they become available, we'll pass them along. Closer to home, we have a heat advisory with a high pushing 90 right now, about 89 degrees as we speak. Patrick DeHaan is the head of petroleum analysis at Gas Buddy. And the good news is Michigan fuel prices are dropping as the new Mideast fighting raises further concerns. Patrick, always a pleasure. It's been a wild time for you and your industry, and we depend on you for whatever insight you can offer.
Well, first and foremost, prices are up 6 cents from last week. We did see a price cycle in Michigan to $4.39 earlier this week, but since they went up, they've started inching back down, as they tend to do. Each time they go up, they start coming back down rather quickly. But overall, price is still about 45 cents lower than they were a month ago. A lot of those refining issues that caused $4.99 prices back in late April have cleared up. Along with that, oil prices have trailed off. Now, some of oil prices falling doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, especially today, for example. Oil earlier today had been declining, even with President Trump promising new tax on Iran and Kark Island, which is the island that's responsible for nearly all of Iran's oil exports. But for now, yeah, I mean, we can enjoy a little bit lower prices, but I'm still a little anxious now with these escalations that have developed and new attacks that the U.S. launched on Iran yesterday and President Trump promising more today. We could see oil prices going up more dramatically, not only the longer the strait remains closed, but the more escalations that develop. Iran has already promised that if the U.S. does attack Kark Island, that it will launch new attacks. So, you know, 3 weeks ago, it seemed all terrific with de-escalations, with Trump hinting at a deal that was imminent. We haven't gotten that deal, and now we're kind of back to escalations.
Yeah, if anyone, of course, they then risk the wrath of President Trump, but they could go back on video and come up with him saying this is going to be solved in 2 days or 3 days. So many times it would be embarrassing. That being said, it seems like with all of this going on, two things. One, you would think that oil prices would be higher. But secondly, we've been told repeatedly that we don't depend on the Strait of Hormuz for our oil. So why does it affect us so much?
Well, because more of our oil is going everywhere else. The U.S. SPR is being bought by customers overseas. Get that. Our own strategic reserve is not necessarily being utilized by us, but it's being sold to countries that are most impacted. It's, you know, for the same reason that home prices don't just go up or down in one neighborhood. They go up and down an entire region and in really the entire country. We're all affected by this. Anyone that consumes or produces oil, a.k.a. every country, is going to be subject to the Strait, because countries that don't get their oil now through the Strait are buying the same oil that you and I do. They can also buy the same gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel that you and I do, because that oil can be moved anywhere via ships. Unlike electricity, which can't be just pumped onto a boat, oil can be. And that is why you and I are so impacted. Every country in the world is impacted by the Strait for that reason.
Patrick DeHaan here, head of petroleum analysis, Gas Buddy. We have depended on him since we met him, and he's never steered us wrong. Now, the president on Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press promised, basically, again, that fuel prices, gasoline and diesel, would, quote, drop like a rock coming down as soon as the war's over. Now, you're in the business. Do you see that happening? If, in fact, later today it was announced, quote unquote, that the war is over.
Well, sure. But we're fast forwarding to the end of it. More increasingly every day, it looks like, when's the end going to be? Right? Because we can all talk about when this is over, but we're not getting a day closer to the end of the war, especially with new escalations. I mean, who knows? What if the end of the war, what if Iran doesn't reopen the Strait for 2 or 3 years? Sure, it sounds terrific to talk about the end of it, but it doesn't seem like, for as much as Trump is talking about the end of the war, he's certainly not trying to get there, especially with new attacks. Whether those are warranted or not, I'm not taking an opinion on that. But, you know, to talk about the end of something while you're still ramping up and escalating the situation, you know, yeah, sure, someday. But there could be a lot of doom and gloom that really changes the end goal as well. I mean, If the U.S. decimates in Iran, if they take over Kark Island and Iran, say, launches nuclear missiles, I mean, that's extremely unlikely. But if that were happening, I mean, to talk about the end and cheap gas seems kind of foolish, right? Because who knows? There could be a lot of things damaged or destroyed, and we could talk about the end of it, but we're far from it at this point. Eventually things go back to normal, right? But is it going to be a new normal, or is it going to be a new world? You know, will things look a lot differently by the end?
Those are awfully good questions, Patrick, that's for sure. Do you see any way around this, finding maybe a new location for lots of oil somewhere that we haven't plugged into before?
Well, you know, I mean, President Trump has already, steered Venezuelan oil to us. It's nowhere near the amount of oil that comes to the Strait. If there was a lever the Trump administration could pull, they would absolutely pull it. But there's no such lever. They've pulled every lever already. Venezuela's oil output is rising, but it can't rise nearly as quickly to offset what we're losing through the Strait. They issued the E15 waiver. They issued a summer gasoline waiver. They issued a Jones Act waiver. They issued the summer gasoline waiver. So there's a lot of waivers, but ultimately, the longer the Strait remains closed, the less impactful those waivers are really going to be. So, there's still the potential that, I mean, all the oil executives are still warning, right? In fact, earlier today, news article, U.S. oil companies still warning President Trump that gas prices could rise. And I'm in the same boat because, you know, last week, it seemed like we were closer to seeing the Strait reopened and a new deal. Today, it's new escalations that are pushing that further down the road. And when oil companies' executives are warning about something, it's probably worth listening to. So the risk is that now we are, again, getting into a worsening problem, not a problem that's any closer to being resolved.
One of the sad, most jarring things that you've said, Patrick, is that our oil in strategic reserves and such is actually not going to us, but going to the highest bidders around the world. So we are being sacrificed in what we have to pay at the pump so that the country makes more money off that oil. I'm not sure where that money goes. And if, you know, if they tell us our taxes are reduced because of it or something else, then I'm okay. But I haven't heard anything like that.
Yeah, no, that'll go to the government's general fund. And who knows, hopefully they'll replenish it right after two administrations have both used it for political purposes or who knows, for crisis. I just hope that we'll eventually refill it all up because, you know, the world we live in, we could definitely use the strategic reserves, and we should use it, not necessarily other countries.
They're our strategic reserves.
It's the U.S. strategic reserve, not the EU strategic reserve.
Correct. Patrick DeHaan telling it like he sees it, and he sees it as the head of petroleum analysis for Gas Buddy. Thank you so much, Patrick. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for having me, Paul. Appreciate it.
Always our pleasure. As we continue at 12:43 on 760 WJR, this is Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. Heat advisory, 89 degrees, and boy, that sweet deals deal that we just heard about for the great Guernsey Farms Dairy. When we have a heat advisory like this, you should think about visiting Guernsey Farms Dairy, getting some of that great, unbelievably good ice cream and their award-winning lemonade as well. All right, Evan Brown here for a quick check. Our Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor, talking about the attacks on Iran, the Strait of Hormuz still closed, and some other things. But I guess the breaking story is, what in the world do we know now is going on at the Pentagon, Evan?
Well, I know that there is some kind of hazmat or air quality issue at the Pentagon that generated some kind of emergency response. I don't know much more than that, I'm afraid. But
nobody does. They're not releasing any information on a Pentagon lockdown.
It could just be a stink bomb in the air conditioning. I don't know, but it could be something worse. You know, let's find out when we find out, I guess, right?
I guess that's right. The United States launching new attacks on Iran, finally, thank goodness, after getting strung along and lied to. And now the Tehran is retaliating against so-called American targets across the Middle East.
They have been. They've tried striking U.S. interests in Jordan and in Kuwait and in Bahrain. Most of these have been intercepted. There was a strike overnight in Bahrain that hit a residential area. It injured a young girl, which is a horrible thing, and I don't think it wins any points for the Iranians for that. I think those in the Arab states would continue to look badly on the Iranian regime right now because of that. What was perhaps most interesting about Iran's response yesterday or last night was that they did not take fire or did not direct any fire on Israel. And that means perhaps they learned a little lesson the other day when they decided to strike Israel after Israel was striking Hezbollah in Lebanon and Israel bit back pretty hard. So I think between that and what the U.S. did to Iran yesterday, hitting a lot of air defenses and radar outputs and oil industry targets, that they might have felt a pretty big sting. And, of course, we are, I believe, about to, if not already, hitting Iran even more. President Trump has said that things like bridges and power plants are now in game. And that can really bring some hurt to the regime if they can't travel across certain bridges to move their weapons. And if they can't use their power plants to power certain facilities where they try to build new weapons.
Very sad, because it indicates to me that Iran fears Israel more than they fear the U.S. And that says an awful lot, in my opinion.
Well, they certainly should fear Israel. Israel has proven to be truly the lion it has always intended itself to be. And the region is certainly in awe of it. As for fearing the United States, I think they did what they always do in terms of the Islamic Republic, is they pretend to want to negotiate for the purpose of stringing people along and wearing the other party down and trying to outlive the current American administration in hopes of getting one that's more amenable to its outlook. And we've had that happen in the past. President Trump, I think, gave them a wide berth, but he apparently has he's just run out of patience with them, I think, and we'll see if he continues to have no patience going forward or if he's persuaded elsewhere. But it looks like the president plans to take over Karg Island, which is perhaps their largest oil repository, storage facility there. But the Iranians should also be pretty dismayed or shocked that President Trump announced yesterday that under the cover of night, we had effectively allowed or arranged for a number of oil tankers to transit out of the Strait of Hormuz, something that Iran had been actively preventing from happening in hopes of keeping the world's economy hostage. Well, that moved about 100 million barrels of oil to the free market. And that's probably why you haven't seen prices rise over the past couple of weeks. You've probably seen them come down just a hair. But that had led to some stability. And if that's what was leading to that stability, then Iran's biggest long-term weapon has just been rendered, obsolete.
After years of anticipation, the 2026 World Cup finally gets underway today in Mexico City. Are you assigned to any coverage on that?
No. And I am all right with that. I do believe I might be attending a game here in Miami at some point. I'm not the biggest soccer fan. I think it'll be fun to just simply go to the game, but I'm not someone that could start, rattling off statistics or something for you.
Do you have a dog in the race in the NBA Finals? Did you watch New York last night come back for the biggest comeback in the history of the game?
Nah, just not my game. I'm not Mr. Sports.
All right, we got to run. We're running out of time. I'm going to save you. Thanks, Evan. Evan Brown, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor. Stay with us. Hour number two on this Thursday, June 11th. And what a pleasure it is to be with you and with the team. Dave Rieger is in for Mike Parsons. Through the end of the week, Danielle Mason, the queen of the switches, has lost her voice screaming at the Tigers game, but she's here with us doing her job. And Rich Luzinski, our WJR traffic and weather first. Altogether, we do our best to bring you relentless positive radio. Can't always do it based on certain things that are going on, but we do our best. And you can stream us, you can podcast us. It always matters if you come back to WJR.com or certainly download the free WJR app. And Facebook and YouTube pages are streaming our live video right now. And we're a great sandwich here. We begin with the one and only Kevin Dietz and WJR All Talk, a daily dose of Dietz. And then we're followed by Ryan Armani, JR Afternoon with Ryan Armani. It's all good. And we're all happy to be here with you. Still no word on a few things. Maybe, you know what, I don't know if it's too late for tomorrow, what you're looking at, but we get Pete Hoekstra on, the ambassador for the United States and Canada, because tomorrow, Friday, was supposed to be a ribbon cutting for the Gordie Howe Bridge, and now that is off. And nobody's talking. Nobody. Nobody's telling us what exactly is going on or why that is not happening, which if the ribbon cutting isn't tomorrow, I'm going to guess that the other people were saying when they told us about the ribbon cutting, they were saying like Monday the bridge would be open. That I can't imagine that's still true, but we don't know. No one's telling us. We have a hazmat situation right now at our Pentagon. We don't know any details there either, so don't go switching off to CNN or Fox News, because they'll just tell you the same thing we're telling you. We don't know what's going on with that. All we know is that for those of us who were lucky enough to watch the basketball game, man, oh, man, the New York Knicks pulled off the greatest comeback in NBA playoff history. They were down 29 points, and they fought back. They fought back to win 107-106 over the Spurs. The city, well, New York City has seen it all. They ain't never seen nothing like this. None of us have. And I could still feel New York City rocking all the way back to Michigan without any question. One of the most exciting sports events, happenings ever. And you do a lot more sports than I do, Dave Rieger. Do you agree with this?
Oh, yeah, 100%. It was exciting. I was edge of my seat the whole game. It was because I kind of had a feeling. And If anybody wanted to make a bet at the start of the second half, the odds for the Knicks to win, you could have made some good money on a comeback. Oh, yeah. Could have made some good money.
Wow. So, yeah, because at the second half, start of the second half, they looked like they were defeated.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean,
Did you?
I did not, but I know some people who did, and they did well. I looking back, as obviously hindsight is 2020, should have pulled the trigger. But
me too.
Exactly. But great comeback by the Knicks. I would say the bigger question is did the Knicks win the game or did the Spurs lose the game? I thought it was a combination of both.
Well,
I thought there were some mistakes that the Spurs made, and they definitely went cold with their shooting. But the Knicks just kind of possession by possession, just inched their way back, and pretty soon the momentum just got them to win. And then an incredible shot at the end by OG Anunoby.
Interesting that you say that, because I never thought of it that way. I guess you're the sports guy and you analyze. I never thought, did the Knicks win it or did the Spurs lose it? I never looked at it that way at all.
Yeah, well, when you're up by that much,
massive failure. There's no question.
And you start shooting three-pointers early in the shot clock, like eight in a row, why are you doing that? Why are you not running clock? There was a funny tweet that I saw someone put out, which was just the logo of the Atlanta Falcons, and they said this is the new logo for the San Antonio Spurs. And what they meant by that was, if you remember the Super Bowl between the Falcons and the Patriots, where they were up 28-3 in the second half, in the start of the fourth quarter, and lost that Super Bowl in overtime. So that was why it was one of the greatest comebacks ever for the Patriots. So somebody put that up. I thought it was very apropos and funny.
Well, the three-point shot is a blessing and a curse.
And, sure, 100%.
I mean, the Knicks couldn't make any of them in the first half.
Right.
And they didn't stop trying. Instead of going for the layup and getting 2 points, they kept trying for the three-pointer and missing it and never getting the rebound.
And part of that is a defense that the Spurs play. They're always pushing them full court. They never let them come up easily. And you live by the three and you die by the three. And that's how the game goes. And
yeah, that's what happened there, too.
The Spurs were so hot in the first half. They were like at over 70% clip in shooting, which is crazy.
Yeah.
And they scored like 67 points in like the first half, and like they scored like 30 or something like that. Like it was ridiculous. It was
now, on the other hand, closer to home, though, I loved this thing, and having lived in New York and having kids living in New York, I loved it, and I'm certainly a New York Knicks supporter, fan, whatever. But closer to home, our Tigers did not do so well, even though Danielle Mason was there cheering them on until she lost her voice. What was the game like, Danielle?
It was wet for a minute. Like for an hour, we were in a rain delay.
I'm just doing this to make her talk. Keep going. I'm listening.
And then I don't really know what happened. I forgot there was a game on because I was chatting. But then a surprise appearance by Matt Vierling happened, and it got really good then. But we still lost.
Well, how do you feel about your other favorite Tiger, Riley Green, striking out in the bottom of the ninth with two on and a chance to tie the game or win the game for the Tigers?
Brutal. Brutal.
I was on my way home then, so I didn't care. I was already in the car.
Rieger, you're brutal. You already picked on her for having her favorite Tiger.
Listen, Jack Krasula came in here. He's here recording a show. And we asked Jack. He's a big sports guy.
He's got one of the best sports memorabilia collections in the world.
He does. And so we asked him, I said, Jack, I could have you name all 25 Tigers, and you may still not pick up Danielle's favorite. So he had the same reaction that I had. Matt Vierling, the first thing he said was, Dave, do you know how much Matt Vierling's card is worth on eBay? Like 2 cents.
I'm going to go buy it right now then.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Danielle. I did not know I was opening you up to this kind of treatment. I wouldn't have done it. But I love Jack, by the way. And
I know
did
he's
give you the
fan.
Silent laugh at any point? Did he do his?
Of course, yes.
I love that man.
Yes.
The silent laugh. Jack Krasula, God bless him. And God does bless him, in fact. What else? Anything else we need to worry about? Nothing new. We haven't bombed Iran out of existence. And my feeling is if you're going to bomb somebody, you bomb them out of existence. But that's not the way it works, apparently. And so we go back and forth, and who knows where we're going from here.
Remember what Trump said, right? You know, it'll be over in 2 days. Don't worry.
If I had $100 for every time he said that, I'd be rolling in the dough.
Exactly.
Why does he keep saying that?
It's a great question. I don't know.
I don't know either. Beth LeBlanc is coming up, reporter extraordinaire from the award-winning Detroit News. It was a front-page story. I had it. I don't know if I might have thrown it away. But I knew she was going to be talking about it. 41 former Michigan lawmakers or their surviving spouses are receiving more than $100,000 annually, decades after leaving office, thanks to the pensions attached to their service in the Michigan House and Senate. They're not breaking any laws. They are merely collecting what they were told they were owed. So it'll be interesting to see what Beth has to say about that. Stay with us here in Focus with Paul W. Smith right here on WJR. Okay, the Tigers underway, and I think I think you told me good news here, Rieger.
Yeah, they're already up 1-0, bottom of the first.
That's always good news, and though it's very hot, I mean it's ugly hot. Air quality index is up, I think, but certainly the heat and humidity requires us to drink lots more water than we probably are. Hydrate, but. It does look like we'll get through weather-wise the game, which sometimes is a challenge these days. All right, 1:22, Beth LeBlanc, reporter extraordinaire from the award-winning The Detroit News, had a front-page story that caught everyone's attention. It showed pictures of the former lawmakers, if you will, and it talked about how much money that they are receiving. They're doing nothing wrong. They're merely collecting their what was called at the time, you remember the expression, that they had Cadillac pensions. So, Beth, what's been the reaction to that big story on the front page you did yesterday?
Yeah, you know, thanks for having me first. And there's been a mixed reaction to it. So some folks have been a little bit outraged that some of these folks are getting six-figure pensions that have had support from taxpayer money. And then other people are saying, look, this was the contract that they signed while they were in office. They were promised these benefits, and now they're receiving them. But it was a very interesting thing to look at. So for folks who are catching up on when this pension system existed, it existed for lawmakers between 1957 and 1997. When they closed it under Governor John Engler at that time, because they saw kind of the writing on the wall that it wouldn't have been sustainable in terms of the unfunded liability that they would be accumulating. So they closed it at that point, but there are still 224 people, former lawmakers or their surviving spouses, who are still collecting from it. And, you know, it's still something kind of closely watched by auditors in the state because they're always keeping a close eye on those unfunded liabilities.
You know, and that's always a little hard for me to follow. It is an unfunded liability, or it's funded at 40% or whatever. Forgive me, Beth, but I'll claim stupidity. What does that mean, and how does that affect us as current taxpayers?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Sometimes we're so steeped in it that we don't think about the fact that it took us a very long time to figure it out. But basically, yeah. So when you get a pension, in the case of these lawmakers, they contributed to the pension, and then they once they reached a certain age, they started drawing from it. And actuaries kind of look at that fund and they say, okay, you're going to get this rate of return on investing those people's contributions, so they can get paid this much going forward, and this is the sustainability of this program. The way they measure that is by how much your liabilities are funded. So they think, for example, this program is going to cost $206 million over its lifetime. but it's only 40% funded. So they only have $80 million to fund that with. So going forward, they're going to have to rely on investments, but those aren't going to bring in what they need. And so what it ultimately means is that the state, who was the employer who made these promises to continue paying these pensions, they're going to have to pitch in money. And that means it's state taxpayer money that's going to have to pitch in to keep this pension fund afloat.
You know, I remember way back when, this is a plan that, as you pointed out, went for some 40 years between 1957 and 1997. I thought, man, I should run for office, because if I win and I'm in office for just 4 years, I get that Cadillac pension plan. I get money for the rest of my life, and I think probably medical coverage as well. I thought, this is spectacular.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason they called it the Cadillac of pension plans. It was a very lucrative plan. They had to vest in it, but the minimum was 6 years that they had to have served. But, you know, for some of these folks, they were able to start collecting at age 50. Take, for example, John Engler, who served in the legislature before becoming governor. He served, I believe, 17, 20 years in the legislature. He was able to start collecting at the age of 50 and has now been collecting for 27 years. And each year, and what is kind of complicating this calculation in terms of whether they're going to have enough money to make it through, is the fact that each year a 4% cost of living adjustment is added to those pensions. So each year it increases by 4%. And that, what we found is our research of like Social Security, Social Security on average does not increase by that amount. Of
4%. No, it's by an average of 2.6% a year over the past 25 years, according to your article, your well done article, Beth LeBlanc. But again, I thought it was 4 years, but you say 6 years to get into the program. But we can be frustrated and we can be upset. But nobody is said to be doing anything wrong. They are merely following what they were told. Now, it can be argued, they were in a position to create this system for themselves. But that's not necessarily true. It started in 1957, and very few of the people on this list were serving in 1957.
Correct. They were kind of grandfathered into the system. Now, they did have the option of declining it. But many of them said, no, I mean, this is a good deal. So they put, you know, between 5% and 9% of their wages towards this pension. And now they're collecting from it. Now, the question is like, okay, it's a contract. It can't be broken. But like, how do you pay that? And at the end of the day, one of the ways they're going to have to pay it is through state taxpayer money.
Well, there's a reason that most companies don't have pensions anymore, and now we're seeing that even though the government kept it going, they're going to also have to pay the piper for these pension dollars. Beth LeBlanc, a reporter extraordinaire for the award-winning The Detroit News, thanks for filling us in on these Cadillac pensions. Front page story yesterday. Job well done, Beth.
Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. 128 at WJR. Two of my favorite people and generous people include my next two guests. Rachel Stewart, the CEO of Gardner White. Rachel, always a pleasure, ma'am. Thank you for being here.
Of course.
And Macomb County Executive Mark Hackle. Mark, also always a pleasure.
Thanks for having us, Paul. Appreciate you.
I am thrilled to point out that Gardner White, the Huron-Clinton Metro Parks, and our Macomb County Executive Mark Hackle are once again teaming up for the second annual Family Summer Kickoff Party coming up Wednesday, June 17th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Gardner White's flagship store in Warren. Rachel, tell our listeners what's going to be happening at that great and important and possibly life-saving event.
Exactly. So we were really excited to do this last year with Mark and his team and the Huron-Clinton Metro Parks, and we are at it again. So for 2 hours, we'll be giving out the first 500 guests a free life jacket. And I learned last year, everyone was very particular about sizes. We have them for children and adults. I got my distribution strategy this year really honed. And then just because it's a kids event, we'll have a lot of other fun things to do. Character meet and greets, music, dancing, food, of course, and everything else. But yeah, I didn't realize, I mean, so Mark is an expert on this, and I was not, but I didn't realize how pervasive drowning is. It's the leading cause of death for children 1 to 4. So easy one to do in that context.
It's horrible, and God bless you for stepping up. And Rachel Stewart, I would point out to you, Mark Hackle, she may not have known last year, but anything she didn't know last year, believe me, she knows for this year and is ready to go. I can promise you that.
Rachel's a quick study. We all know that. She picked up on it rather well. But again, the fact that she even opened her doors and allows this to happen at her stores is absolutely incredible. The lines were out the door. I mean, that was the other big challenge we had, and I think that's something I learned from Rachel, is sometimes you got to kind of warn people ahead of time, you know, maybe 2 or 3 per customer. Some people were coming in trying to take 10 at a time, and, for their family, and you're thinking, hang on a second here, there's a big line here. So that became somewhat of a challenge, but it's the right thing for the right reason. And Amy McMillan from Huron-Clinton Metropolitan Authority, she's the director out there. She's participating in this, and she's just a treasure for us here in Southeast Michigan, what she does for the Metro Parks.
Amy McMillan, the CEO of the Huron-Clinton Metro Parks. And everybody is very proud to participate in this because, as I said at the beginning, it is a life-saving operation, if you will, distributing free life jackets to the first 500 guests as part of this effort to help families enjoy our beautiful Michigan lakes, the pools, the waterways more safely this summer. And Rachel, as you said, most of us are just learning how dangerous the water is and how many, especially kids, we lose, or just even adults too, in our various, we're the Great Lakes state. We should certainly be able to protect everyone.
Well, I didn't realize in Michigan, you're never more than 6 miles from a body of water.
Or 6 miles from a Gardner White, but go ahead.
Well, that's our goal. I'm working on effectuating that one.
And by the way, in case anyone's wondering, Mark, if you were wondering, there is a sale today at Gardner White. Just wanted to let you know.
There's always some kind of sale going on there. She does. Oh, I know. She does great. It's interesting when she talks about the various lakes. Rachel brought that up. The various lakes in here, everybody talks about, the Great Lakes, and they forget about Lake St. Clair itself. Lake St. Clair's average depth is only about 11 feet, but sometimes people just assume that, they can swim. It's not going to be a problem. They'll find the bottom. We've had many situations out there, my past experience in law enforcement. There's no question about it. I mean, people sometimes think they're good swimmers. They just don't realize it. But when they get disrupted falling into that water, it is a huge challenge for them. So making sure the kids have life jackets and availability for them on a boat, there's requirements by law to make sure.
I was just going to say, isn't it the law?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, especially when it comes to kids. Kids in an open area, if they're under 6 years of age, they must have one on. But there has to be a life jacket for everyone on board that vessel within reachable distance. And so, you make sure it's in good condition, usable condition. And the ones that Rachel's handing out are helping us get out there to the public. These are brand new life jackets, and they're type 1s, 2s. And I think there's a few type 3s flotation devices in there as well.
Well, this
sounds
is
like an expert.
You're an expert. You understand. But this is, leave it to Rachel Stewart, the CEO of Gardner White. She sponsors America's Thanksgiving Parade presented by Gardner White. I can't go through all the things, all the good things she does for people, the community.
Things.
What's that?
All the fun things.
All the fun things.
I mean,
family friendly.
I have to tease it. Tony Michaels was in our office today. We're dreaming up our new float. For America's Thanksgiving Day 100th parade.
Wow. You going to give us a little hint?
Is there something you want to tell us?
Nothing? No.
You should not
tease
us like
Paul
that.
Show. Come on. this is Paul
guys,
Show breaking news.
You do a great job. You add to the fun. You do great business. You offer phenomenal products at phenomenal prices. Just your taking over the mattress business. We all know now that we all need better mattresses because we all need to sleep better. We are all sleep deprived. And now Gardner White with your sleep shops and such, it's a no-brainer.
Well, thank you. No, thank you, Paul, because we've really – actually, I mean, we always were very serious about the bedding business. But we've really added a ton to our stores. I mean, and we've also created these bedding stores, which are fantastic and sort of meet people where they are. But we've added a ton of new lines that I think there is not a place, I think, in America where you find more mattresses than under a single roof.
I believe that.
Smart business, I don't know, but we've got more than 100.
I believe that. So Mark Hackle, our county executive, Macomb County executive, Rachel Stewart, CEO of Gardner White, and even a call out to Amy McMillan, CEO of Huron Clinton Metro Parks. It's all happening Wednesday, June 17th from 6 till 8 p.m. at the fabulous Gardner White, 6500 East 14 Mile Road in Warren, Michigan. It is a life-saving event. The first 500 people will get a free life jacket. This is just such a big, wonderful thing that you're doing, Rachel Stewart, Mark Hackle, Amy McMillan. And I'm presuming that it's Rachel who's paying the bill, so I especially thank you, Rachel, for doing...
That's my assumption, too.
Well, you go with the deep pockets, Rachel.
There you go.
And I've known Mark a long time in a lot of different jobs, and none of them have given him deep pockets, but he's done great work.
No, that's true.
That's okay. He's right where he needs to be.
And aren't we lucky? Aren't we lucky? God bless you both, and I know this is going to be a big, big success. Wednesday, June 17th, 6 till 8 p.m., Gardner White, 6500 East 14 Mile Road in Warren. Put it on your calendar. Show up early. Be of the first 500 guests and get your free life jacket, for goodness sakes.
Now that school's out, because I'm dealing with this too at home, bring your kids and let them run around our store.
Well, because you're going to have some fun there. You've got some
exactly.
You've got some food. You've got some music.
Keep them entertained. You got dancing. We can you know, keep them dancing all night to really get them so they pass out when they get home. All the stuff.
Refreshments. The whole thing. And you haven't lived until you've seen Mark Hackle do his special dance. So there you are.
time just ran out.
Wait a minute. It's your wife who is the Irish step dancer. It's not you. It's your wife. All right.
That's pretty
sick. Yes. Macomb County Executive Mark Hackle and also the wonderful Rachel Stewart, the CEO of Gardner White. Thanks, guys, very much. Keep up the good work. We love you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Rachel.
We continue in focus at 1:45 on WJR. Well, the president has revealed his 80th birthday wish. Did you see that, Mr. Rieger?
Yes.
He hopes for peace for the world, despite the U.S. launching more strikes on Iran. But now we're told that he has canceled the additional strikes on Iran.
Yes, they have been canceled. USA Today is reporting that. Does this mean that progress is being made? Because the strikes have been canceled tonight?
I don't know. Or is this just facilitating those that are on those gambling sites? Who knows? I saw that. I'm sorry, but I did see that the barrel of oil price has gone down. It's 80. I don't see it now, but 87 or something. I'm not sure what it was. Anyway, he was responding to a reporter who asked what his birthday wish would be other than peace in the Middle East. And he said, let me go a step further. Peace for the world. Okay.
Yeah.
So God bless him. Hard to figure, but he is trying to juggle that, but of course, when dealing with the people of Iran, the leaders of Iran, you know, you're dealing with liars who have set the stage over years of the ways that they would hurt us and hurt Israel and hurt anybody else that doesn't fall in line with their religious beliefs and everything else. It's just very bizarre.
It's just another... you know, thing that happens in the Middle East with conflict.
Sad news is...
Anywhere within the Middle East,
And when it happens in the Middle East, it affects us.
It does.
Imagine if 100%. There was no Middle East, how we would not be affected by all these things all the time, or would somebody else step up and be idiots?
That's a great question. I never thought of that.
Yeah, well, I have a million times. Rachel Stewart, CEO of Gardner White, what a great person she is. And, of course, we know our Macomb County executive, Mark Hackle, is a great guy. And I have to believe that the CEO of Huron Clinton Metro Parks, Amy McMillan, is a great person as well.
I was shocked to hear that he said that the depth of Lake St. Clair is very shallow. 11 feet, that's it.
11 feet is the average depth.
That's the average depth, that's it. I was shocked to hear that.
That was shocking. All of this is happening Wednesday, June 17th, 6 to 8 p.m. It's so important. I want to mention again, free life jackets, real life jackets, to the first 500 guests as part of this deal. Wednesday, June 17th, 6 to 8 p.m., the Gardner White at 6500 East 14 Mile Road, Warren, Michigan. It's why I try to do business with Rachel Stewart and Gardner White anytime I can from anywhere.
Yeah, she even dropped a little nugget there about the float for the Thanksgiving
new
Day
float,
Parade.
Tony Michaels, yeah.
Yeah.
Tony was in line early to get his life jacket, but sorry, Tony, you have to wait until Wednesday.
He was probably playing golf.
There's the hardest working guy in showbiz, Tony Michaels.
And I see him everywhere. Every event that we do a remote at, Tony Michaels is there.
Because he supports them all. God bless him for that. And they deserve, at the parade company, a new building, for God's sakes.
Yeah,
instead of one that we've been in there broadcasting when it's raining on
100%.
Us. And that means it's raining on those beautiful floats. Come on. We just have to make it happen. All right. Let's see. I just wanted to thank again Rod Alberts and the Founders Committee, Fritz Bossert, Keith Flinginger, David Madeira, Corey McFarlane, Paul Sabatini. All good guys. They're the Founders Committee for the Oldfield Society dinner at the Big Rock Italian Chop House. I hope to see them a little later tonight, celebrating the love of fine autos, cigars, food, wine, and whiskey. No better city than Detroit and the Detroit area for the love of fine autos. And as far as cigars, food, wine, and great whiskey, no better place than the Big Rock Italian Chop House there in Birmingham. And by the way, as I mentioned earlier, Barney Oldfield. It's named after Barney Oldfield, the Oldfield Society, and he was really America's first prominent race car driver. Coming up, JR Afternoon, Ryan Ermanni. Ryan, have you ever seen anything like we experienced with the basketball game last night?
I've never seen anything like it. I'm not sure we'll ever see anything like it again, Paul. That was incredible stuff.
It really was. And you're an enthusiastic guy, so I can only imagine how enthusiastic you were.
My mind.
I believe that. We'll be listening. We'll hear all about it. JR Afternoon with Ryan Ermanni coming up next. Regards, Paul W. Smith.